Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on You Can Beat City Hall when we come back. Well, those who already walk submissively will say that there is no cause for alarm. But submissiveness is not our heritage, and the First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. Now, you know, I wish I'd have thought of making that statement myself, but that quotation comes from the Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes, our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, more gun control, but you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years, now have we? And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not from the political process, the politicians, the lawyers, or the bureaucrats. Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power here in America is in our courts, not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school, the number 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about this thing of you can beat City Hall. City Hall, the system. It doesn't include just bureaucrats and government officials. It includes the professions, you know, the rip-off artists and doctoring and dentistry and all of the ins and outs that come from, gee, can I pull it off? Can I speed down the highway with my fuzzbuster and beat the policeman at his own game? Can I get through this intersection without running a red light? Can I live my life without this insurance? Can I drive my car without auto insurance? There's a thousand ways out there to beat the system, and everybody is trying it. I mean, you know, I'm not the only guy in the world that wants to beat the system. I remember one time our local sheriff, Jimmy Shaw was his name, here about 20 years ago, he was driving me up to another jail in another county, and he was driving about 80 miles an hour. He didn't have his siren on. He didn't have his lights on. There wasn't any great hurry, but he's driving 80 miles an hour in a 55-mile-an-hour zone. Now, what's that all about? Well, he is the system, and he can speed, and he can get away with it because he's the sheriff. And people that are in positions of power and authority act like that. I've used the word coward before. I'll use it again. And that's because that same fellow wouldn't do that unless he was the sheriff, or unless he had a fuzzbuster on the dashboard, or he thought he would look around and he would see the cop before the cop saw him. I remember riding one time with a policeman when I was a kid. Now, he was off duty. He was just driving. I was going down to visit his nephew in Long Beach, California, and he was driving pretty fast. And he wanted to get by some cars, and this car was in his way. And so he honked his horn, beep, 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 and this car didn't get out of his way. And so he reached in his pocket, pulled out his badge, and flashed it at this guy. Well, this guy pulled over, and this guy's name was Jim Brady, and he got out, and he just gave that guy a hell of a tongue lashing, you know, for holding him up. Here was another example of a guy using his position of authority, a policeman, off duty, driving me to a summer vacation, had nothing to do with any official police business, hauling this guy over and giving him a good tongue lashing for, I don't know, getting in his way. I couldn't see that this guy was causing a great problem. He was driving slow down the road, and Brady wanted to get by him. And then when he honked, he didn't pull over and let him go by. So he said, "Well, I'll give this guy something here." Well, this thing of beating the system, I told you about Pat Connolly yesterday. I said, Pat over here, you know, when the LID tried to gouge him that $800, remember, on his sewer water hookup over there, old Pat comes into court. He actually never had to go to court. He just wrote a letter to the LID, and he said, "Now, if we go to court, and here's the way this is going to have to come down. You guys have already squirreled my sale." And mysteriously, within the next 30 days, the sale came back to fruition. They went in. Pat walked out with his closing check. He had the full amount, and that's what he cared about. How it came down between the developer, of course, and the LID, I don't know. Noel Pat was pretty hot and heavy into zoning and planning, and he would read the zoning and planning statutes, and he would make plans and preparations. His hot button was beating the zoning and planning people. He didn't care about speeding. He didn't care too much about the income tax. And that's the way I noticed that people are, too. Some people are really hot and heavy into income tax. Other people are hot and heavy into traffic and traffic codes. And Pat, his hot button was zoning and planning. So one day, after Pat had sold his Eustick house, now with his jeans full of money, he wanted to build a house again out here on Eustick Road. But this time, he wanted to build it on a lot. Now, he happened to own a lot, just a building lot, no acreage, no way to put in a well, no way to put in the septic system. So he's going to have to build this house and hook up to the sewer, hook up to the water, hook up to the power. It's going to be a house sitting on a lot with houses on both sides. And he wants to build this house without a building permit. Now, how do you do that? How do you build a house without a building permit? Now, the law says you got to have a building permit, and it has to be approved by zoning and planning. And this is in the city of Boise, so now it's inside the city limits. Well, it can be done, but it's not easy, and it's not for the faint of heart, and it's not for those that are timid. Because remember, we have to obey all the laws all the time. So we have to comply with the zoning laws. We have to comply with the building laws and the building inspector. And yet build a house without a permit. Sounds like an impossible task, but I would have thought that it was impossible until it was actually done. So I'm an old-timey general contractor. I never thought to take it on. I never thought to do it, but I've always wanted to, you know. I think everybody that builds or everybody that goes down through the bureaucracy, the red tape, you know, of zoning and planning, dreams of building a house and giving them the finger and telling them to kiss off. But we don't do it, but we dream of it. See? Well, here's a guy that actually did it, and here's what the story tells us. Well, Pat goes down one day to the zoning and planning people after he had carefully made all of his legal research into zoning and planning. In fact, he's the guy, remember, that wrote the book on zoning and planning by Pat Connolly. It's a how-to manual on this thing of zoning and planning and what the statutes require. Well, zoning and planning came in with the Rockefellers in 1922 here in the United States. And in Boise, Idaho, they have a $100 minimum that if you're going to do a repair on your house, if you're going to do something that's $100, it's back now about 1970-something, why, you don't need a building permit. So if you're just going to put in a toilet tank, you don't need a plumbing permit. If you're going to put in an outlet, you don't need an electrical permit. If you're going to fix your steps on the front porch or something like that, you don't need a building permit because it's a repair. Now, if this repair is getting to be more than $100, the law requires that you get a permit. Now, nobody does it. You know, if it's a $500 repair, fixing your porch or something like that, most people just go fix it and they wouldn't get the permit. But you see, that permit costs you money, and it costs you 1% of the project. So if you were going to build something that cost $1,000, you'd have to pay a $10 building fee. If it was $500, you have a $5 fee. If it was $5,000, it's $50, and so on up the line. So that by the time you're building a house, you know, and now these building permits, now in California, they cost $30,000. You want to build a new house in California, they've got all kinds of fees tacked on. And we mentioned this a little earlier in the series of programs that it's really a tax is what it boils down to. It's a governmental tax. Government taxes you when you earn money. They call that an income tax, and they tax you when you spend the money, and that's called a sales tax. And they tax you while you've got the money, and that's called a property tax. And governments tax anything that wiggles, moves, and squirms. They produce nothing, consume much, and we call that a tax. Zoning and planning is simply a tax. A building permit is a tax. So you want to build a house, you want to build shelter. You would think that food, clothing, and shelter are fundamental rights, but not in government's purview, not in the bureaucraties, it isn't. So Pat had amassed, this house that he built now was about a $70,000 house, as I recall, $80,000 maybe, it was $80,000. Pretty good size house and a pretty pricey house, you know, for back in the late 70s and early 80s, it was kind of a pricey little deal. A little bit more than the average guy could risk to lose, because if you get caught building without a building permit, they come in with a bulldozer and bulldozer down and get teared out. Now you talk about police power, you know, you talk about intimidation. See, most people are fearful of that economic consequence, not having the money to lose, and so if you're rich, you don't care, and if you're poor, you can't afford it. And so the government comes in and they enact these various and sundry laws. And we comply with the laws. We don't like them, but we comply with them out of, remember, vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. So Pat amassed all the material that he needed to build the house. He had a 235-acre farm up at Emmett. So he got all of the boards and the windows and the roofing and everything that he needed, and he amassed that. He had that there. He never bought. During the construction phase of this house, he never bought 35 cents worth of anything from anybody to build this house. And that was the critical key in being able to pull this off. Because one of the first things that zoning and planning, there's two agencies here, is zoning and planning, and then you go over to the building department. Zoning and planning requires that you have an architect's drawing. You've got to have blueprints. You've got to have plans. And then they look at your plans, and if you need a zoning variance, they may grant it or may not. Or if you're going to build, in this case, he's going to build a single-family home in a single-family zoned residential area, so he's not looking for any any zoning waivers. He's not seeking to build a 10-story office building. He doesn't need zoning changes or anything like that. But the rules are the rules, and you've got to have this architect's drawing. It just happened that time it cost $5,000. See, architects want to get paid too. So zoning and planning benefits certain professionals, just like a compulsory, mandatory automobile insurance liability policy benefits the insurance industry. Zoning and planning benefits the architects. They're just one group of people that benefit from this bureaucracy. It creates a monopoly is what it does. I mean, who can draw plans? An architect. So you've got to at least have a mechanical engineering degree or a mechanical something or other they call these guys, draftsmen. You have to be a skilled draftsman to draw these plans. And they want $5,000 to do this. And so Pat didn't want to spend the $5,000 because remember that counts towards your $100. $100. So he went in and he said he'd like to build a house, and they said, where's your plans? And he said he didn't have any, and he said he was poor and didn't have the money, and they said, too bad, Buster. If you don't have plans, you don't get zoning and planning approval. So Pat went out to an architect, and he said, I'd like to get plans. And the architect said $5,000, and Pat said, well, I don't have $5,000. I want you to give me the plans free. And the architect said, that's crazy. No, I won't do that. And Pat said, well, would you put that in writing for me? And the architect did. Probably a buddy of his. And the architect said, no money, no plans. And then Pat took the letter down to zoning and planning, and he said, see, I went down to an architect to get plans, and he won't give them to me without money, and I want to build a house, just like everybody else. And I think that this department has a discriminatory policy against the poor. Now, the Supreme Court back in 1964, when they overturned the vagrancy statute, said you can't discriminate against people because they're poor. That's why vagrancy is unconstitutional. It's a discriminatory policy against a suspect classification of persons called the poor. And so he said, I think you've got this discriminatory policy against me because I'm poor, and I want you to give me this recommendation or waiver, whatever they call it, so that I can go over to the building department and get a building permit. Well, they got to thinking about that, and they said, well, what do you have in the way of plans? And so he pulled out a napkin, and he said, this is what I intend to build. And they decided in their legal department that maybe they better give him, since he's not seeking any changes or variations. He's not seeking any rezoning. And he already owns the lot, and besides that, the zoning has already been approved. And they said, okay, we'll make an exception in this case, and we'll pass this out of zoning and planning. Well, the first hurdle was over, and even if they hadn't recommended it, it wouldn't have been fatal to the next step in the process. But they did. They gave him the approval, so he took the approval over to the building department, and they handed him a long form, and they said, fill this out. So remember now, you have to obey all the laws. So Pat filled out the entire form, answered every question on it, signed it on the bottom. And on the question that said, what is the value of the project to be constructed, Pat very carefully and very boldly wrote in $0. $0. We are not going to spend any money. We're going to build a house, but we're not going to spend any money. And if you'll take a look at zoning and planning, it's an economic law. I mentioned this to you last time. Laws that come out of your legislature and out of your Congress are not laws that deal with morality. They're not laws that say, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery. Those are laws that say, thou shalt pay so much, thou shalt do this, thou shalt buy this or that or something else. They're economic. Legislatures are not interested in morality. They're interested in money. The bureaucracy isn't interested in law and order. They're interested in profit and gain. And so he was clearly informed that you can't build a house for no money, no dollars. And Pat said, why? Is it against the law? Well, no. No, it's not against the law. It's just impossible. You can't build a house without money. You have to buy materials to build a house. And Pat said, well, wait a minute. People have been building houses in New Guinea for thousands of years without any money. Eskimos build igloos and live in them, and they've been doing that for thousands of years, and they don't have any money. Poor people all over the world have been building houses. Maybe they're not very good houses. Maybe they're pretty poor. Maybe they're poorly constructed. Maybe in Mexico they build them out of adobe, that's mud. Maybe I've just got a mud house, but they've been building them free without money for thousands of years. Well, you can't build a house and follow the building codes of Boise, Idaho without money. Pat said, let me try. And they said, no. Now, you've got to put in $1,000 or $10,000 or $50,000 or whatever you're going to build this house for, but you've got to have a dollar figure in here. And Pat said, no, sir. No, sir. I don't want to lie to you. I want to build a house and I don't want to spend any money. I'm poor and I don't have any money to spend. And they wouldn't give him a permit on the grounds that if this project is under $100, the law itself prohibits them from issuing a permit. Are you going to build this house for $101? No, sir. No, sir. I'm not going to spend $101 or $1,002 or $10,003. I'm going to build a house for $0. And that's the correct number in there. And they said, well, if you're not going to spend any money, we can't issue a permit. Okay, now the bureaucrat is now out of the way. And so now Pat went out, broke ground, started building a house. And as he's working away, building his house, putting in the foundation, first thing he had to do is call the power company. They come out free to put in a pole and a power line to the house so that you've got electricity there to work with. And I know Pat's got a little dump truck, and he starts hauling gravel from Emmett. And he's got a little bobcat, and he's digging around in there. In fact, he had a backhoe, and he's putting in the foundation. He and his boy, he has a son. He and his son are building a house, and they're working together. And Ranger Rick comes by, and he comes over, and he says, well, what are you doing here? And he says, well, I'm building a house. And the building inspector said, well, where's your permit? And he said, I don't have one. And he says, you can't build a house without a permit. And he said, well, I went down to get a permit. And they said, you don't need a permit. We can't issue a permit if you're not going to spend more than $100. And Pat said, I'm not spending any money on this house. This is not a commercial project. This is a residence. And I'm building this house for shelter. I need food, clothing, and shelter. I need life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And this comes from the Constitution of the United States. And so the building inspector, not being humored at all, wrote up a red tag and red tagged the job. Now, when your job is red tagged, you have to stop. It's called cease and desist immediately. And so Pat and his boy quit immediately. But when they red tagged the job, now all of a sudden it's a legal matter because, you see, now he's being prosecuted by the city for building a house without a permit. If they would have red tagged the job and not issued the permit, then Pat would have had to have sued the city because they're taking away a valuable property right. But in this case, they charged him with a crime, that is building a house without a permit. And so now he's got to make an appearance in court on a misdemeanor criminal charge. Okay, so now the case is scheduled before Judge Carey. And Pat came in with witnesses, evidence, and testimony. And, of course, the government came in and they testified. They brought in zoning and planning. They brought in the building department. They brought in the inspector. You know, of course, they were watching him. They knew where he intended to build the house. He already told them. He filled out the paperwork. And he said, I want to build this house, and here's the location. Well, the testimony that came out in the case was similar to this. Pat cross-examined the building inspector, and he said, Now, is there a minimum requirement for issuing a building permit? Yes. And what is that? It's $100. And he said, did you observe $100 worth of work being done on the building? And the building inspector said, yes. Why? He's out there with a bobcat and a backhoe and a dump truck, and they're out there just working away, and they got a building site going. They got a power pole in there. And he said, did you come to court today with any evidence of this expenditure? And the building inspector said, what do you mean? What? Yeah, have you got any receipts? Have you got any canceled checks? Have you got any evidence of any money being spent on this project? And the building inspector said, no. Pat said, okay. Says, and then of your own knowledge, you don't have any firsthand knowledge of any money being expended. No, I don't. Do you have any other evidence other than your testimony that Mr. Connolly has spent in excess of $100 on this project to date? And he said, no, I don't. He went through all the government witnesses, and they testified to that fact. Now, Pat and his boy got on the witness stand, and they testified that they had not spent $100 and that they had gone down to get a building permit, and they wouldn't issue them a building permit. He cited the statute, that is the city ordinance, and said, well, now, wait a minute. You can't issue a permit if the project is being built for under $100, and I haven't spent $100 and don't intend to spend $100. And the city has a discriminatory policy against the poor, and closed his case out, and it was kind of a nail-biter because the judge took 21 days in Idaho. You can take it under advisement and issue a written opinion in 21 days. And Terry came back with a written opinion with an admonition. And in the written opinion, he said, no evidence has been presented here at trial that Mr. Connolly has spent more than $100. And the admonition was, as soon as the expenditures exceed $100, then he must go down and get a building permit. Pat said, well, I'll just do that. As soon as I spend $100, I will go right down and get a building permit. Well, Pat finished the house, and he did it under budget. He finished the house with less expenditure than $100. Now, in building the house, you need to be very careful that you follow all of the rules and regulations. For instance, if the headers across doors and windows call for 2x8s or 2x10s, you want to make sure that you put in 2x8s and 2x10s. If the wiring requires that you put in number 12 wire, then make sure that you put in 12 and not 14. If it calls for number 8 in the service, make sure that you put in number 8 wire. You want to build the house, and you want to build the project to at least the minimum standards. This will be important as we progress along. I'll show you one. So Pat did. Now, normally when you're building a project, building a house or something, you put in the foundation, it's what we call the rough-in. You rough the project in, and then you call for a rough-in inspection. Now remember, you've got to do this with three agencies. You've got to have a building permit, a plumbing permit, and an electrical permit. Pat went into plumbing and did the same thing. He went into electric and he did the same thing. And then if it's under $100, you don't need a permit. So he's out there putting in the wiring and plumbing. And remember, you got to be able to do this without calling a plumbing contractor now to come out and do this or that or something else, and without calling some carpenter out, because the minute they catch you spending more than $100 on this project, now they got you. And remember, we have to obey all the laws all the time. So what we're looking for is, how do we do this by practicing all of these laws, rules, and regulations? And in ordinary circumstances, we'd say, well, that's impossible. Well, not with Pat and his boy working together as a family to build a residence, which is non-commercial. Remember that this always deals with commerce. It comes under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8 of the Federal Constitution. Government regulates trade, commerce, business, and industry as it affects the public interest. So if you can stay out of trade, commerce, business, and industry and affect no public interest, then it's a property right. Property. That's a right, not a privilege. Building a house is a privilege. And building shelter is a right. You don't have a right to build a house and then sell it. You have a right to build a house and live in it. So Pat's working away on his house, and every time that he'd come up to a rough-end inspection, he would write a letter, certified mail, to the appropriate department and say, I'm going to give you 10 days to come out and inspect, and if you don't come out and inspect in 10 days, I presume then that you've approved it. And so this went on, and they never came out and never inspected. Of course, they can't. There's no permits. A plumbing inspector can't come out and inspect a project without a permit issued. Doesn't have any jurisdiction, any power. Can't come out and inspect if you're spending $100 to repair. So this went on through the entire building process, which took most of a year, him and his boy. And there's a lot of inspections, there's a lot of certified letters, and then every one of those certified letters needs to be kept in a file, because remember, we may be going to litigation when this project is completed, and if at any time we go over $100, they may come out here and say, he got bulldozed us down. Now he's got a court order. As soon as he hits $100, he's going to go down and get a permit. If he doesn't hit $100, then he won't go down and get the permit. And we've got plumbing, we've got electrical, and we've got building. He finishes the project. He's now ready to hook up the electricity and the plumbing to the sewer, the water, and to get these inspections done, the final inspection, and a certificate of occupancy, and address, and then to move into his home. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard worldwide over the Internet 7 days a week here in the United States. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about You Can Beat City Hall, Zoning and Planning, Building Permits. Pat Connolly building a house out on Eustick Road in Boise, Idaho, about 1980, as I recall, 80 to 85, along in there somewhere. Pat Connolly was very interested in zoning and planning, and that's what it takes, somebody that's interested in a particular body or segment of law, and then study the statutes so that you can see where are the loopholes, what are the exceptions to the rules. And then we have to follow all of the rules, being careful that we slip through the cracks. All right, now with this in mind, Pat calls for a final inspection. And of course, the building department does not come out for the final inspection. Ditto for plumbing and electric. And so the three agencies have decided that, well, we're not going to come out and inspect it. And if we don't come out and inspect it, you know, we don't get into trouble. He's built it. He's got a court order over here that says if you spend $100, you better come down and get a permit. He hasn't come down to get the permit. They've been watching him. You know, you can just about bet they're watching him like a hawk. If there had ever been a Thriftway truck pull up, if there had ever been anybody else come out there and work on that project, if he'd have ever, you know, hired somebody casual labor and paid him $150, you know, to come out there and shovel dirt or landscape or do anything, they'd have been on him like flies on stink. So very carefully. Pat never hired anybody, just him and his boy. Took him about a year. And they're just working away there, doing their thing, building a house, building shelter, not building a commercial project. House isn't for sale. Now, Pat had made a deal with Howard Vandegrift. Well, Howard now was a local plumber. And he went into Howard, and he contracted with Howard to hook up the water, city water, and sewer for $1 and other good and valuable consideration, not to exceed $10 in value. Now, we don't know what kind of a deal that Howard and Pat made over lunch down at Elmer's Pancake House, but they had made some kind of a deal, because Howard Vandegrift went out and he got a plumbing permit, and the plumbing permit was $30 to hook up the sewer. He came out with his backhoe, dug up the street, and hooked up the sewer to the stubbed-in rough-in in the front yard. And he also hooked up the water. Now, he went to Dick Alloway, Alloway Electric, and he had Dick Alloway, for $1, another good and valuable consideration, pull a permit and put the service on the house. I don't know what the deal was that he had made with Dick, probably the same deal he made with Howard. I'm an old-timey contractor, and I used Dick Alloway and Howard Vandegrift a number of times on my projects. I had a pretty good working relationship with Dick Alloway, for instance. And, you know, contractors do that, and it's not against the law for Dick Alloway to go pull a permit for $30 and go out and do a job and lose money. It probably cost him $300 to put that service on the house. And it cost him $30 for the permit, and if he contracted for $1, another good and valuable consideration, not to exceed $10, and lost, oh, $250 or $300 in the process, that's not illegal to lose money on a building project. It's unusual, but not illegal. I suspect that Howard and Dick had been compensated in some other manner other than in dollars for these two projects. Now, we've got the house built, we've got the electric, and we've got the plumbing. We're hooked up to the sewer, we're hooked up to the water, we're ready to move in. We just have one last hurdle. In Idaho, when you get the final inspection, now we're ready to call Idaho Power, and Idaho Power will come out and hook up the power. So Pat called Idaho Power and he said, well, come out and hook up the power. Well, when the power company crew arrives, they're going to string a line now from the power pole out on the street. Remember, we've got a power pole in the yard. That's called your temporary service. So they've got a line that goes from the transformer out on the street down here to the power pole for your temporary service. But we've got to have permanent service, and now the permanent service is hanging on the side of the house. And they've got to come out here and they've got to restring this wire. They pull up their wire from the temporary service and they hang the permanent wire to the new service. So when they get there, before they hook up your power, they're looking for the last item. They're looking for the signed off electrical permit. That means final inspection has been approved. And there's no final inspection on electric. Well, of course not. If there's no permit, there can't be a final inspection. So power company says, well, we're not going to hook this up until there's a final inspection. Now this looks like checkmate. Now, of course, you could put in solar, but this is 1980, and solar is, you know, in its infancy. You could put in a generator, but that costs you an arm and a leg to run a generator, you know. I mean, there's ways to get around it. Pat, you know, he wants electric service like everybody else. And so he went down to the Public Utility Commission, and he petitioned the Public Utility Commission, naming Idaho Power Company as a discriminatory agency, in collusion with the electric department in not hooking up his power. So Terry Swisher was the commissioner of the PUC back in those days, and so Terry called a meeting, you know, of the Public Utility Commission, and they're just like a mini trial. This is an administrative hearing, that's what it is. And they produce witnesses, evidence, and testimony. So Pat called in the electric department, called in Dick Alloway. Dick Alloway had a permit. He had a final, but there was no final on any of the electric hooks done in the house. And so here's a final inspection on the plumbing, but there's no final inspection on the plumbing in the house, which isn't a problem because he's already hooked up to the sewer and water. But he's not hooked up to the power. And it's the power company that's standing in the way. So the Public Utility Commission, they listened to the evidence, and they came back, and they said, well, it looks like that Mr. Connolly has built a house, wired it, and done it for less than $100, and the law is pretty plain. It says $100, and if he didn't spend $100, and nobody seems to have any evidence, any receipts, any hard documents here that can show us that he spent more than $100 or violated the law in any way. So they ordered the power company to hook up the power. Power company hooked it up. All right, now, are there any drawbacks? Yeah, there's a couple. The taxes on this lot in Boise, Idaho, as I recall, were $27. And after the house was built, the taxes stayed at $27. Because as far as the city's concerned, this is a vacant lot. That house doesn't exist. Furthermore, he couldn't get an address. And without an address, you can't get mail delivery. So you have to have a post office box because the post office will not deliver mail to a house that doesn't have an address. And you can't get an address until you've got a certificate of occupancy. And you can't get a certificate of occupancy until you're written off on the final inspection. So here's Pat living in his house on Eustick Road with no address, no mail delivery. And years later, Pat decided to retire and move to Florida, and he wanted to sell the house. When he went to sell the house, without a certificate of occupancy, no bank or lending institution will lend money on it. Well, not that it doesn't exist, not that it isn't built to standards, but there isn't any way to know that the house is built to current building standards. And so the lending institutions look at it and say, well, we're not going to lend money on a house without an address, without a certificate of occupancy. Well, now Pat owns the house free and clear, so he sold it on a contract for deed, and he simply took the position of the bank as the first mortgage holder and collected the payments. I don't think that there were any really great negative impacts on the project. Of course, you're always fearful that if you screw up, you'll have to bulldoze this thing to the ground, and that could be pretty pricey. So I'm not suggesting that this is a process or a procedure for the faint-hearted or those that are weak. But remember, the wicked flee when none pursue. The wicked flee when none pursue. The righteous are bold as lions. A righteous man who obeys the laws is as bold as a lion. That comes from Proverbs 27, verse 1. Proverbs 27, verse 1. So there's the story of Pat Connolly and the house. I've told that story a number of times. It's a pretty funny story. Bottom line is, yes, you can beat City Hall. I remember one time I had a problem similar to this. It was a house that I'd had one time at 4421 Denton Street. And like a fool, I signed a contract for my brother to buy tires down at Al Hall Tire Company. $600, as I recall, and my brother didn't make the payments, and you guessed it, Al Hall wanted to collect, so he turned it over to a collection agency called Idaho Collections. A guy by the name of Beeren Kane were the two lawyers that were involved. Well, Beeren Kane, Stephen Beeren, I forgot Kane's name now. But they operated a little outfit called Idaho Collections Incorporated. So here's a law office, and they've got a collection company, and I've co-signed for my brother to buy these tires. I went surety, you know, for my brother, and sure enough, my surety came back and bit me in the butt, so here I am. I got a bill from the Idaho Collection Agency, and they said that they wanted me to pay them $1,329, as I recall. $1,300 on a $600 bill. That was more than double. Now, there's no doubt that I owe the $600. I don't deny it. I co-signed. My brother got the tires. And old Al Hall, who's a buddy of mine, I called him up, and I said, Al, how come you didn't call me? And he said, well, I didn't know it was you, George. You didn't think about it. Well, you know, I'd been down there, bought tires from old Al for years and years, and I always figured, you know, hell, if there was some problem, Al would call me. But Al didn't call me. He turned it over to collection. So there I am. And Al is out of the picture. You know, once you sell that account to the collection agency, you know, you're out of it. Commerce, you know. Article 1, Section 8, the Commerce Clause comes in here. Uniform Commercial Code takes charge. So, you know, we can't attack the law and say, well, the UCC is bunk and these laws here and rules and regulations, you know. We live in a civilized society. We live in a world of law. And if it wasn't the law of Idaho, it would be the law of God. I mean, you know, there's just, you know, it's just the way life is. There's laws and rules and regulations that we're all bound to follow. It's the way we live here in America. And again, I want to remember that we're not seeking to overthrow the law or overturn the law or circumvent the law. What we're seeking to do here is to get everything that we're entitled to under the law, under the rules, under the regulations. And it's simply my contention that most people don't get everything that they're entitled to. Now, you know, even if you're a judgment debtor, for crying out loud, there's certain rights that you have, certain privileges and immunities, you know, like bankruptcy, and, you know, there's moves that you can make designed into the law for your benefit. I pointed this out with being grandfathered in, the grandfather clause is there for a reason. And, of course, the law, when the LID comes in and they put in some improvement, they want everybody to comply with this new law regulation, but they can't make all the grandfather people do it, so they try to intimidate them into doing it, and they do a good job of that. And if you can be intimidated into waiving your rights, well, then you don't have any rights. Now, even as a judgment debtor, I've got some rights. I called the collection agency, and I said, now, let's settle this and be intelligent people. I'll pay you a fee in addition to the $600, but I'm not going to pay you the $1,329. And I think probably negotiations broke down over the term, I'm not going to pay you $1,329, because Beeren Kane got a little huffy, and they said, you'll pay every damn dime. And I think they looked at me, George Gordon in Boise, Idaho, as a deep pockets defendant. Deep pockets. After all, I was a building contractor and general contractor, and I think they just thought, well, we're just going to stick it to this guy. Now, unbeknownst to them, you see, I'd closed my business, went out of the contracting business, I've been in the manufacturing business. By now, I have closed out my manufacturing business. The truth of the matter is, I'm a pauper. I'm poor. I haven't got, you know, that proverbial pot to pee in or a place to put it or a window to throw it out of, some old granny used to say. And so I got a little bit cocky on my side, and I went down and answered their complaint. And we went to litigation. And then in the litigation, they came up with a judgment, debtor's default judgment, and then they went to collect or execute the default judgment, and they brought me in before Judge Willis in a show cause hearing, and we got on the witness stand, and he said, now, Mr. Gordon, do you own a house at 4421 Denton Street? Now, in a judgment debtor's hearing and then an execution, these guys have about 30 minutes, because you come in at 9 in the morning until noon. There's about 6 or 8 cases. This is what they call law day. This is where lawyers come in and argue motion hearings. And so I knew that the time limit on this is about 30 minutes. Now, there's a complicating factor that came in here because in a separate deal, I came into possession of a house up in Boise County. It was just a little A-frame house on 2 acres. As I recall, it was worth $14,000 in those days. And here I am in this awkward position of going into the show cause hearing, and I own this property in Boise County. And if you lie when you're in court, you know, if you get up there and you lie on the witness stand, that's called perjury. You can go to prison for 5 years for perjury. Do you want to go to prison over $1,329? So you got to be very, very careful here that you don't lie. You got to tell the truth. But when you're testifying, you don't want to tell your opponent anything. That's where a little training comes in. So I'm on the witness stand. He says, well, do you own any real property in Ada County? Notice he didn't ask me if you own any real property in Idaho or any real property in Boise County or any other county or in Florida or someplace else. He said, do you own any real property in Ada County? And I said, no, I don't. So he came up and he said, do you own a house at 4421 Denton Street? So I paused for a little effect and I said, no, I don't believe I do. So he handed me a piece of paper. He said, now would you look at this piece of paper? And it was the county assessor's sheet or a report on houses, property taxes. And as I went down the list, he said, look about halfway down that page. And about halfway down that page, do you see your name on there? And I looked about halfway down the page at 4421 Denton Street. He had it marked very prominently. And I saw my name, George Gordon, 4421 Denton Street, on the Ada County property assessor's tax collection sheet there. See? And he said, do you see your name there? And I said, yeah. And he said, how do you explain your name being on the assessor's rolls at 4421 Denton Street and you testify that you don't own that house? And my answer was, I don't. Well, he got kind of huffy and he said, may I remind you, Mr. Gordon, that you're testifying under penalty of perjury? And I said, thank you. And then he said, do you deny that you own the house at 4421 Denton Street? And I said, no. And he said, well, then you admit you own the house at 4421 Denton Street. And I said, I do not. And he said, may I remind you that you're testifying under penalty of perjury? And I said, thank you. Now, what does he know so far? Even Judge Willis is sitting on the edge of his chair looking across the bench at me. I think they got you, Gordon. I think they got you. Well, so far I haven't told him anything, and so far I haven't lied. So the examination goes on, and pretty soon he said, well, did you live in that house? I said, I did. And he said, well, then what did you do with that house? And I said, well, I traded it to Cal Williams. He said, well, what did you trade it for? And I said, well, I traded it for three houses on Holmes. And he said, well, you own three houses on Holmes. I said, no, sir. And he said, well, what did you do with the houses on Holmes? I said, I traded it for a house and 7 acres in Nampa. And he said, aha, then you own a house and 7 acres in Nampa. I said, no, I don't. And he said, what'd you do with that? I said, I traded it for a 13% interest in the federal apartments on Idaho Street. And this went on and on and on and on. Pretty soon, time's running out. And the judge looks over at Beer and he says, now, Mr. Beer, how much longer are you going to be? And so Beer now gets a signal, he's got to wrap this up, and he did. He wrapped it up. And we walked out of there, and Beer and Kane never found out whether or not what happened to the house in Boise or Boise County. And I didn't tell them. They didn't ask. They didn't know. And I didn't lie. And then I beat City Hall. And I didn't pay him the $1,329, which is what I told him. I'm willing to settle. I would have paid him $800. I would have paid them a couple $100, you know, for their time, effort, and energy. Later, I went down to Al Hall. I went to Al and I said, now, Al, I owe you $600. And he said, well, I turned that over to collection, and if they collect from you, I get 50%. And I said, well, Al, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. So I peeled off 6 Benjis for Al, and I said, now, I don't need a receipt, Al. And here's the $600 I owe you, fair and square. My brother didn't pay. And Al thanked me. And I said, in the future, Al, if this comes up again, would you please call me? Let me take care of it. Never came up again because from that I learned never co-sign for anybody. Of course, I didn't know that in those days. Did you know there's 6 statutes in the Bible that prohibit you from co-signing? Yeah, God told you, so don't let sleep come to your eyes when you've co-signed until you extract yourself like a bird from a snare. I didn't know that. As dumb as a box of rocks, and I was out here signing for people. All right, now let's go back over this and let's see if we can learn a lesson here. Trick here to this is don't lie. It's against the law. I didn't lie. And as a result of that, I saved the $1,329. Remember, lying now is called perjury. And it can get you into a lot of trouble. And that's what Martha Stewart did. See, it's not against the law to shut up. It's against the law to lie when you open your mouth. That's why judges, you know, tell you, you know, if you want to use the Fifth Amendment, you've got to shut up. But you see, boys and girls, in a judgment debtor's hearing, you have to testify. Otherwise, you'll be held in contempt of court. Because they're already sitting there with a judgment against you. So with the judgment against me, I've got to come in for the examination. It just so happens that I don't have anything. And this is another example as to why, since the first plank to the Communist Manifesto has been adopted as public policy in the United States, it's not advantageous for you to own anything. So I can sit here today and tell you, no, I don't own anything. I avoid property ownership, you know, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And I have followed a little different program. I think that control of the property is more important than the actual ownership of the property. And this is what you see going on in America today. You'll find that people like Donald Trump, I don't think Donald Trump owns a lot of property. I think he controls a lot of property. I think he profits and benefits from property, but I don't think he really owns a lot of it. And it's against public policy for you to own property, because it violates that first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property and land. And we've been practicing that since 1933 here in the United States with vigor, as the Kennedys would say. And so I picked up on that and I said, yeah, I think that's probably good, sound, personal practice if you don't own property. And so I didn't own any property at that point in time, save for that house and 2 acres, but they didn't ask me about that. Had they asked me, I'd have had to say, well, yeah, I've got that house. And then they would have leaned it and I would have had to pay the full amount. But you know, sometimes you luck out, and that's one of those cases where they didn't ask the right question, they didn't get to the right answer, and so they got stiffed. And that's part of courtroom strategy and procedure. It's knowing what to say, and who to say it to, and what not to say, and who not to say it to. It's not against the law not to say something. It's against the law to say something that's not true. So tuck that one away in your heart, boys and girls, and there's another methodology for beating City Hall. Well, we're about out of time, so let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. We'll talk more about how to see Hall. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.